Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Papal Appeal. Pope Benedict urges the international community to step up its aid to those affected by the famine in the Horn of Africa region, and says church aid representatives are meeting this week to discuss how they can increase their own relief efforts for the victims. Go and proclaim. We talk to an official from the Society for the Propagation of the Faith about the upcoming World Mission Sunday, whose theme this year is As the Father Has Sent Me, So I Send You. And Between Heaven and Mirth. That's the title of a new book by a prize-winning Jesuit author who invites readers to rediscover the importance of humour and laughter in our daily lives and reflects on why joy is the inevitable result of faith. Benedict appealed to the international community on Wednesday to step up its aid to those affected by the famine in the Horn of Africa region, and says church aid organisations are meeting this week to discuss how they can increase their own relief operation for the victims. Chris Altieri reports.
Pope Benedict XVI addressed an appeal this Wednesday for aid to those suffering in the Horn of Africa, where millions of people are daily faced with death by starvation, drought, and violence. Speaking during his weekly general audience, the Holy Father renewed what he called his heartfelt invitation to the international community to continue its commitment to those suffering, and he invited everyone to offer prayers and practical help for so many brothers and sisters so harshly tested, particularly for the children in the region who every day succumb in appalling numbers to disease and lack of food and water.
Rinnovo il mio accorato invito alla comunità internazionale perché continui il suo impegno verso quei popoli.
Present at the audience were the Cardinal President of the Holy Father's personal charitable organ, the Pontifical Council Cor Unum, and the Apostolic Administrator for Mogadishu, Bishop Giorgio Bertin, as well as representatives of various Catholic charities who are meeting to design and implement a response to the situation which the Holy Father, along with several countries and international organizations, recognizes as a full-blown humanitarian emergency.
Affrontare tale emergenza umanitaria.
Pope Benedict also recalled the appeal made by the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, on behalf of the affected populations, and informed the faithful that a representative of Dr. Williams would be taking part in the emergency meetings. The Holy Father's catechetical focus during the Wednesday audience was the radical trust in God's loving care, which is an essential aspect of Christian prayer. The Holy Father approached the matter through the text of Psalm 23, The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
The psalmist begins by presenting God as a good shepherd who guides him to green pastures, standing at his side, and protecting him from every danger. He leads me beside still waters, he refreshes my soul. The scene then passes to the shepherd's tent, where the Lord welcomes him as a guest, gracing him with the gifts of food, oil, and wine. You prepare a table before me. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. God's protection continues to accompany the psalmist with goodness and mercy along his way, a way which leads to length of days in the Lord's temple.
The Pope went on to say that the powerful image of God as the shepherd of Israel accompanied the whole religious history of the chosen people from the Exodus to the return to the Promised Land.
It finds its ultimate expression and fulfillment in the coming of Jesus, the Good Shepherd, who gave his life for his sheep, preparing for us the table of his body and blood as a foretaste of the definitive messianic banquet which awaits us in heaven.
The Holy Father also had greetings for different groups, including several groups of English-speaking pilgrims.
I welcome all the English-speaking pilgrims and visitors present to this audience, especially those from England, Scotland, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Nigeria, Singapore, the Philippines, and the United States. My special greeting goes to the alumni and friends celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Pontifical Filipino College. I also greet the new students from the Pontifical Beda College and offer prayerful good wishes to the deacon class of the Pontifical North American College and their families. Upon all of you, I invoke God's blessings of joy and peace. In a special way, I would like to greet the delegation of the Theology Faculty of the University of Thessaloniki, who have wished to confer upon me the Apostle Jason of Thessaloniki Gold Medal. I am deeply honored by this gracious gesture, which is an eloquent sign of the growing understanding and dialogue between Catholic and Orthodox Christians. I pray that it will be a barbing of ever greater progress in our efforts to respond in fidelity, truth, and charity to the Lord's summons to unity. I thank the delegation most cordially and offer my prayerful good wishes for their teaching and research. God bless you all.
The Wednesday audience was the first since the Holy Father's return from his stay at the papal summer residence in Castel Gandolfo. I'm Chris Oltieri.
Good news, proclaiming peace.
Proclaiming the gospel to all people is the most precious service that the Church can render to humanity. This was the key point stressed by Pope Benedict in his message for this year's World Mission Sunday, which has been celebrated on October the 23rd. In his message, the Pope talked about how the gospel is not an exclusive possession of whoever has received it, but a gift commitment to be shared with all. The theme for this year's World Mission Sunday is, As the Father has sent me, so I send you. Father Timothy Lehane is the Secretary General of the Society for the Propagation of the Faith, and he spoke to my colleague Emma McCarthy about this year's theme and why supporting the Church's missionary activity is so vital.
This, as you say, is Mission Month. Originally in 1926, Pope Pius XI decided to have a Mission Sunday. So this year we're actually celebrating the 85th anniversary of World Mission Sunday. And the idea was that all the churches of the world would become aware of the whole church, of the mission of the whole church. So it's a sense of all the churches for the one church. And it's was a Sunday originally set aside that people would pray for the missions, people would become aware of the missions, and then that people would help the missions economically. Over the past few years, there has been a sort of a tendency in many bishops' conferences, which is wonderful, to dedicate a whole month of October to the mission, as a mission month. And as you rightly stated, the Holy Father writes a message every year. And he writes a message for all the priests, all the religious, all the laity, and all the bishops of the different dioceses. And you asked me to explain a little bit what this year's message says. The gospel is not exclusive good to one who has received it, but it is a gift to be shared. And indeed, the Holy Father talks about a gift commitment to be shared with others. So what the Holy Father is trying to say this year in the World Mission Sunday message, that you and I have been given a gift. And a gift, once you receive a gift, you get all excited and all happy about receiving a gift, and you want to go and tell others that you received a gift. If you receive something from your husband or from your wife or from your children or in the factory where you're working, of course you'll go and you'll say, oh, I got that. And you'll put it up on the wall or some stand and say, I got that in a certain year from a certain person. What Holy Father was basically saying to us, we should see our faith as a gift, but it's also a commitment, it's also a responsibility, because as baptized people, we are asked to go and proclaim, and that's the Holy Father's mission. Go and proclaim what you have heard and what you have seen, as he said, like the apostles on the road to Emmaus.
In today's globalised society, is mission superseded? Are we now concentrating too much on evangelisation and not enough on mission?
No, I think mission, see, in the context, in today's globalised society, as you rightly say, the different contexts, the different socio-political elements in the world change. We can see North Africa at the moment, for example. What's happening in North Africa, the what they call this, the new Arab Spring of the last 12 months, that has changed totally the optic of our missionaries that are there in North Africa. If you take Europe at the moment, for example, where many people are leaving the church, actively leaving the church, and where other people are not going to church or not interested in church, or if you take Latin America, where there's a big Pentecostal movement at the moment of different evangelical groups coming in, or even in parts of Africa, the context is different. So there is a need for mission, and there is a need for us as Catholics and as Christians to proclaim why we are Christians. And again, if you take today's world as well, in many of our countries today, the Christian churches, not alone the Catholic churches, the Christian churches are being closed or being shut down. Because, according to the authorities, the local authorities, and this happens in many countries, they have no license to worship. They haven't been given license to worship. So our context, what is our context there in a society where Christians are being persecuted, where Christians are a minority group? I've recently come back from Kano in the north of Nigeria, and I was in one of the five chapels that were burnt down this year with the priests. And then that priest took me out to his new village. We passed through many Muslim towns, and then we came to a small little Christian village where he's building a new church. So we need to announce the joy of the resurrected Lord and the experience of that joy in our lives. Again, going back to the Holy Father's message, it's a little bit like, you know, the apostles on the road to Emmaus. They were sad. They felt deceived. What's this? And we thought he'd do this, and we thought he'd do that. And then all of a sudden, the stranger comes, the foreigner comes, and he begins to talk to them. And he begins to tell them about what Jesus said. And all of a sudden, they recognize him. Or it's a bit like the Samaritan woman in John 4. What does she do? She goes to the well, she looks for water, she talks to the stranger, in this case it's Jesus, and then she goes running back. She says, I've met a man who has told me wonderful things about myself and wonderful things about the water of life. And then she brings people to the man who is Jesus. And there's a beautiful part in the end of that gospel, somewhere around 4:40, and it says, you know, thank you very much. We don't need you anymore because we've seen him and we've heard him ourselves. And I think that's very important for us as Christians, to bring the message of life. As the Holy Father says, it's the most precious gift we can give to humanity in this Mission Sunday message. He talks about the fullness of life because he said so many people are searching in today's world, and the most precious gift we can give people is the fullness of life experienced by us through our resurrected Lord.
Very simply, you were speaking there in your last answer, as I was saying, you spoke there about your recent visit to Nigeria and to see the devastation in the wake of ethnic violence in Nigeria. And this is part of your job, isn't it? It's to help people.
Well, religious violence more than ethnic, yeah.
Religious violence. This is part of your job, is to help people understand exactly what they're doing. It's their prayers, but also their money is a very active part of mission. Can you perhaps speak to us, just give us one example? You gave us the example of Nigeria, but just give us another little example of a story of how their participation in Mission Sunday can change the reality for Christian communities in less fortunate parts of the world.
Well, there are many situations in the world today, and especially in Africa and Asia, where a local church is very vibrant because there are many people in it. For example, I can talk about a situation in Tanzania, where I was this year, where the local church is there. They're a very, very vibrant church, but they have no place to meet. They meet in a a very, very dilapidated, broken down hall. And what they want is some sort of a structure where they can sit down and meet. And all they want are four walls and a roof. And they don't need any more. And they can't do themselves. I mean, because they, financially, it's a very, very poor place. They are agricultural people. Or if you take, we say, the southern part of India or the northern part of India, you have a lot of the Dalit groups, which are very, very poor people. These are people who want to get involved in their local Christian community. But again, as I said, they have no place to meet. So what we're doing is, in World Mission Sundays, we're offering these people an opportunity so that they can meet. And again, here's a thing. You know, if we look today, 40 years ago, when we spoke about missions, we spoke about Europeans going on the missions. And many Europeans went on the missions. But now we have the local churches who listened to the European missionaries, who have now want to give a commitment to their faith, as the Holy Father says here in his World Mission Sunday message, a gift commitment. And they understand it's a gift. Or, for example, I was in Nigeria lately, and the church in the southern part of Nigeria is quite aware that it was a gift from the Irish missionaries that they have received, and now they want to commit themselves to give that gift back to somebody else.
Like Ireland?
Like Ireland. And, for example, they need formation. They need possibilities in order that they can actually form the local Christians and send the local Catholics out on mission. And they can't. I was with a bishop yesterday from the jungle in Peru, the Amazon jungle in Peru, and he has 10 priests from Europe going to work in his diocese. And he said, Father, I can't afford to keep them because in order to bring a priest from Europe, I too need money. And he said, where do I get it? I was helping him to build a local chapel or a local house for priests. But I mean, he wants to give those priests a certain amount of subvention as well. Those priests need to live. Those priests need to get petrol for their canoe when they're going up the Amazon jungle. One bishop, for example, in Ecuador and South America, every time he goes out to a community, he has to take a plane, right? And he only goes out every few weeks because every time he goes out in that plane, even though it's his own, it's a missionary plane, it costs $600. So, like, there's a lot of expense on mission today in poorer countries, especially amongst persecuted Christians, where they need financial support. So our Mission Sunday money then is distributed to these, and believe me, I could tell you 1,000 stories because we have 6,000 projects that we accept every year out of 15,000. Dear Emma, I would love to be able to accept the 15,000 projects because they're needy projects. This year, I cut out projects because I hadn't sufficient money. And that's very, very sad.
Would you like to make one last appeal?
I would like to appeal to everybody who's listening at the moment to just consider for one moment one person or one community that they would like to help and say, okay, I can help a certain community through World Mission Sunday.
Whenever you see me talk about Jesus, he's the savior of my soul. He's the owner.
That was Father Timothy Lahan, Secretary General of the Society for the Propagation of the Faith, speaking to my colleague Emma McCarthy. Faith should lead to joy, and religion is not meant to be gloomy. That's the uplifting message a prize-winning Jesuit author is seeking to convey in a new book that was published this week called Between Heaven and Mirth. Written by Father James Martin, who's the culture editor at America Magazine in the US, the book is intended to remind people that Christ has risen, which is a joyful message, and Christians should be joyful believers. He told me how in this book he is trying to overturn the stereotype that the saints were gloomy and dour and that Jesus was always serious. Let's listen now to that interview. What is the central message you are trying to convey in this new book of yours?
Well, that faith should lead to joy, basically, and that religion is not meant to be gloomy.
Many people, in fact, might view religion or holy people, those with a strong faith, as often quite gloomy or at least rather dour, serious people. Are you trying to overturn that stereotype in a way?
Well, I'm trying not only to overturn the stereotype, but actually overturn the practice. I think it's just trying to rebalance things a little bit and remind people that for Christians, Christ is risen, which is a joyful message, and that we should be joyful believers.
And what examples do you give in your book of holy people, be they saints, popes, biblical heroes, heroines, or spiritual writers, who have displayed a really good sense of humor in their life and work?
Well, I talk all the way back in the Old Testament. You have people like Abraham and Sarah who are portrayed as laughing. You have Jesus, who had a good sense of humor in his parables. And more recently, I talk about people like Pope John the 23rd, who was a great wit, and there are tons of stories about him laughing and joking with people. So I think I'm trying to overturn the stereotype, not only that the saints were gloomy and dour, but that Jesus was always serious.
And what methods do you use, or how do you try to explain that joy is the inevitable result of faith? Can you give us some actual examples that you use in your book?
Well, I talk a lot about the saints in terms of real-life examples, and as I said, John the 23rd. But you look at someone like St. Philip Neri, who was called in his day the humorous saint, who used to go around Rome with half of his beard shaved to remind himself not to take himself too seriously. And people like St. Catherine Drexel, the great Philadelphia heiress, who once wrote, "Don't ever say that I was miserable. I've always been the most happiest of women." So I think, you read the lives of the saints, and it's very easy to pick out stories and find stories of their humor and their laughter, and more importantly, their joy.
And do you give suggestions as to how we can all use humor to show our faith?
I do. I have, as I call it, 11 and a half serious reasons for good humor. And one of them is not taking yourself too seriously and learning to laugh at yourself. Another is to try to find the humor in our everyday lives. And a third really is to think about some of the stuff I talk about in the book, that the great spiritual masters really themselves used humor and can be examples for us.
And in what other ways can laughter and humor help us all in our daily lives?
Well, I think it puts things into perspective. I think religious people and sometimes even religious leaders have a tendency to take themselves far too seriously. As a friend of mine likes to say, there's good news and better news. The good news is that there's a Messiah. The better news is that it's not you. And we tend to forget that. And I think religious leaders who people put up on pedestals need to remind themselves. And Pope Benedict has said that recently.
Have you yourself always been a happy person, a person with a good sense of humor? Or did you come to realize a bit later on in life just how important this was?
Well, I think I've always been cheerful. Like anyone, I'm not happy all the time. I think joy is something deeper than that. But the book was written really as a response to what I saw as a real deadly seriousness among religious people and a desire to try to recover this idea of joy, humor, and laughter as something not to be embarrassed about, but to look at as virtues in the spiritual life. And once again, if you look through the lives of the saints and even the Bible, you'll find that hidden, but I think that we've been so tempted to see gloominess and dourness as a sort of requirement of religion that we've overlooked that.
What are some of the positive things that you talk about in your book that humor can do for us, apart from the obvious one, of course, of making us laugh and thereby feel happier?
Well, for one thing, it can help us in social relations. I think that anyone who's ever been in a meeting where people are laughing knows that it goes better. Also, when we laugh, we're more able to listen. Laughter is the opposite of the fight or flight response, where we tense up and cannot listen. And so when we're laughing, we're actually more open to hearing things. And I think also just being joyful makes us more grateful for life. You know, joy is a great sign of God's presence, as so many of the spiritual writers have said. So there are multiple ways of looking at the benefits of joy, humor, and laughter.
So I take it this book's got some jokes and amusing anecdotes taken from real life. If so, can you share one or two of them briefly with us?
Sure. I think my favorite ones are from Blessed John the 23rd, whose most famous joke came when a journalist innocently asked him, "Your Holiness, how many people work in the Vatican?" And he said, of course, about half of them. But another time he was at a dinner party when he was still the nuncio in Paris, and he was seated across from a woman wearing a very low-cut dress. And his secretary said, "Your Eminence, what a scandal this is. Everyone is looking at that woman." And Angelo Roncalli, later Pope John the 23rd, said, "Well, no one is looking at that woman. Everyone is looking at me to see if I am looking at that woman." So now there's a story that I always tell, and people just laugh and find it wonderful that someone in such a high level of authority could have a sense of humor about himself. And I think once again it shows that you can be religious and spiritual and believe in Christ and be a person with a sense of humor.
And of all the people that you talk about in this book as being the good examples of a good sense of humor, you mentioned there Blessed Pope John the 23rd, but is there another one that you really think stands out? And if so, could you say why?
I think besides John the 23rd, it would be Philip Neri. He was known in his lifetime for being funny. As I said, he went around Rome with half of his beard shaved off. He used to wear a cushion on top of his head. He had a sign over his door that said, "The House of Christian Mirth." So there's someone who in his lifetime really tried to push this idea of the sense of humor and the sense of joy. He even said, a glad heart is made more perfect more quickly than a sad heart. So there's someone who really, I think, took as one of his missions the idea that it was good to help people laugh and enjoy themselves.
And what feedback so far have you had from those who've read the advance copies? What are they saying about it? Have they made any comments to you?
I think people are happy that they're given permission to be joyful. So much of Christian spirituality focuses on suffering, which of course is very important, or on the cross, which is also very important. But it also needs to focus on the joyful parts of Jesus' life and of our life. And I think people, when I give these talks and when I've shown them the book, they're relieved and they're happy, and I've been very delighted myself about that, and that gives me a lot of joy.
So would you say it's a laugh-out-loud book?
I would, because there are plenty of jokes in it and anecdotes in between the more serious scriptural exegesis. As I say in the introduction, it's laughable that a book about humor should be serious, and so it's a very lighthearted book in itself.
And before ending, maybe you could read us an excerpt you could share with our listeners.
Well, here's a great quote from the Holy Father himself, and he wrote in the book, God and the World, "I believe God has a great sense of humor. Sometimes he gives you something like a nudge and says, don't take yourself so seriously. Humor is, in fact, an essential element in the mirth of creation. We can see how, in many matters in our lives, God wants to prod us into taking things a bit more lightly, to see the funny side of it, to get down off our pedestal and not to forget our sense of fun."
Okay. Maybe you could also share with us how you sum up all you've been trying to say in the book at the end of it. Maybe it's a joke you end with. I don't know. Can you share it with us anyhow?
Sure. I talk about using joy as a preparation for heaven, because if we understand this life in part as preparation for heaven, and heaven's going to be a joyful place, then why not start enjoying ourselves now?
I was speaking to Father James Martin, author of a new book called Between Heaven and Mirth. Well, that's all for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at Vatican Radio's English programme. But we hope you have enjoyed listening to us. We'll be on the air again at the same time tomorrow. And don't forget, you can always find our programmes at the click of a mouse on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.